Black and white and red all over. Ian Murta. He can talk football all day.
You know, since reporting my first match way back in 1986, I've seen some quite incredible games. I saw Newcastle score 8 in Bobby Robson's first game in charge at St James's Park against Sheffield Wednesday. Then there was Middlesbrough scoring 8 in Sven Goran Eriksson's last game in charge of Manchester City. I remember seeing Sunderland play Chelsea off the park in 1999, 4 up at half time. They eventually won 4-1, but at half time it could have been any score. But I have never seen a game like April the 23rd last year at St James's Park, when Newcastle last played Tottenham. They were 5-0 up after 21 minutes. And at that stage, I thought, for the first time in my life, and I'm sure I wasn't alone, I believed I was going to watch a side hit double figures. It didn't happen. They won 6-1, and it will be nothing like that tomorrow. But it's still one of the most incredible games that I've ever been to in my life.
Yep. Can't disagree. I mean, it was. I was watching it on TV, and you did at 20 minutes, 25 minutes. You were thinking, "What is this score going to be?" Because Tottenham had fallen to pieces.
That's right, and it was different from every other game, you know, because it was. You know, Harry Kane was looking at his teammates, and he did score a consolation goal, and it was just frightening. You really did think they were going to hit 10. And I never felt that when Middlesbrough were 8-1 up, when Newcastle were 8-0 up, or when Sunderland were 4-0 up after 35 minutes against Chelsea. I never felt the same.
But you're right, it's not going to happen this weekend. I mean, I think that's one thing
it's
you can guarantee.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, they said. I mean, obviously, as a Celtic fan, I'm not surprised at all that Postecoglou's doing such a tremendous job at Tottenham. It wouldn't surprise me at all, Dave, if this was an away win. You know, Newcastle, yes, they look decent. They can still put out a decent side offensively, but they've got an awful lot of injuries in defence. That Tottenham side, they attack from the word go. Mm-hmm. You know, they pour men forward, and I don't think Newcastle have the defence to cope with that tomorrow. And I might be proved wrong.
I mean, and as big a pat on the back to Big Ange is the fact that he's doing this without Harry Kane.
Well, that's right. I mean, he's, you know, they're scoring from all over the park. I think the other day was that two defenders scored, didn't they, in the most recent game. They'll always have Son, who's an outstanding player. Rickarlson, who's injured at the moment, he's been scoring goals. Johnson's scoring goals. And, yeah, at the beginning of the season, the football they played was a joy to behold. And then I think they had one or two injuries, didn't they? Maddison, I don't think, has got back to his early season form, but he's a wonderful player to watch, isn't he? I know an awful lot of Newcastle fans would have loved to have seen him at St James's Park this season. In fact, Eddie Howe talked about it at the press conference this morning, said he was never really that close to signing him. But listen, David, a person who is perfect to talk to about this is Kieran Kelly, who's never been on the show before. He is one of the Evening Chronicle's men who covers Newcastle United, and he used to cover Manchester United. So I'm very interested to hear his views on the two clubs and how he sees tomorrow's game, of course. Well, Kieran, I'll ask your predictions for the three games later, but I think there's one prediction we can both safely make, and that's it won't be 6-1 to Newcastle against Spurs tomorrow, will it?
No, although you never really know what you're going to get with Newcastle, that's for sure. But what's changed at Spurs since then is remarkable. Obviously, they've had a change of manager, but even if you look at the number of players from that team who have moved on since, I think it'd be a completely different Tottenham team. But you know, who knows? I think Newcastle shouldn't go into that with fear either. I think it's an early kickoff. The fans are going to be really up for it. There's a little bit of momentum with the club again. And it looks to me like it's going to be a great game.
Looking back to that game, it's almost exactly 12 months ago at St James's Park. I mean, I've been around the block once or twice, but I can't recall a game like that. Newcastle were 5-0 up after 21 minutes. And I think everyone really was, you know, searching the web for record scorelines, etc. It was astonishing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'll never forget looking around the press box and seeing people laughing, you know, almost... People couldn't comprehend just what was happening. I had certainly never seen anything like that before. I know people at the club who went in at half time, and obviously Newcastle were 5-0 against Spurs, and the tables in the chairman's suite were mixed. So they're sitting with people from Spurs almost trying to keep a straight face, as it were. It was staggering, really. I think the fact that Christian Stellini, who was the interim manager of Tottenham, he effectively lost his job as a result of that game. You know, I've never seen a visiting team really just capitulate like that. It was staggering, really. I suppose when Newcastle look back on it, they might think in the second half they should have scored more goals. It was just incredible.
I mean, it's almost a cliche, but it was Harry Kane against Newcastle United. I mean, he looked ashamed, and I think he scored a consolation goal just before half time, but really all around him heads were dropping. It was just remarkable. It was an amazing scene.
Yeah, and I think you forget as well, obviously we know how that season finished for Spurs and how turbulent it was, but I think at the time they were maybe only 3 points behind Newcastle, so it wasn't like they were out of the race for the Champions League. They were supposedly still very much in it. But if you were to look at those two teams, if you're an alien landing from outer space, you wouldn't have thought they're both going for the same prize, as it were, to finish in the top four. It was, I don't think anyone, whether it was a Spurs fan or Newcastle, even the most optimistic Newcastle fan, saw it coming. It's truly staggering.
Now, what we do know, Kieran, is this is a very, very different Spurs side this season. Postecoglou's done a wonderful, wonderful job. They are fourth in the table. I don't think many people would dispute the fact that at this stage they are probably the fourth best team in the country. And they've flourished without Harry Kane when many predicted doom and gloom for them.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I think it's quite timely, really, with we all know the links with Newcastle are seeing some of their best players being linked with moves away. And you do feel it's the doomsday, the idea of Bruno Guimaraes one day moving on, or Alexander Isak one day moving on. The Newcastle, of course, desperately want to keep hold of them. They don't want to have to sell the prized assets. But you look at what Spurs have done. They've proved there is life after, you know, not only their record goal scorer, but their captain, their best player, and the way the team has grown under a really progressive manager, you can't help but be impressed. You look at how they spent money last season. James Maddison immediately comes to mind. I look at Mickey van de Ven at the back, made some really astute signings.
The kind
of players as well who they seem to have the right mentality as well. It's something that's often leveled at Spurs is, you know, the whole Spursy notion that they'll get to a point in the season where it looks like they're going to do something special, and then it comes crashing down. And we saw that last season, of course. But you look at the way they are this season, they just seem to have a bit about them. Certainly, they're going to have a say in the title race. I think they play all of the top three before the end of the season. So it feels a different club. Famous last words when they come to St. James on Saturday. Yes. But I certainly expect them to be a lot better than they were last season.
They do seem to have that balance right between swagger and steel, because, you know, as you've mentioned, Van der Ven at the back, has he been timed to something like 10.4 for the 100 metres, something quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And really, they do look a much better team with him there.
Yeah, I personally didn't know much about him before they signed him, and I wouldn't think it's an exaggeration to say he's been one of the best signings of the season, really. Just the way, as I was saying, just defensively, Spurs, there are a lot of question marks about them, but he just has that pace, as you say, that ability to cover and get back, and he's still so young as well. You wouldn't have known it's his first season in the Premier League, so he really looks a find for them. I think it'll just be a different sort of game from last season. I don't think last season has any bearing. As I said, so many players have moved on from Spurs. I think of Lloris, Perisic, Davinson Sanchez, players who all played in that game last season. And it's just going to be a different test for Newcastle, who, of course, are missing so many players. You know, can they go again? Can they, you know, they have game changers themselves, but with so many missing, can they pull out a big performance?
Now, Kieran, this is your first appearance on the Black and White and Red All Over show. You're not only Galway's finest, but you're one of the few journalists who you're now covering Newcastle on a day-to-day basis. But of course, in a past life, you covered Manchester United on a day-to-day basis. And yeah. I think our listeners will be very interested just to hear an insider's view, as it were. You know, how do the two clubs compare? Do Newcastle feel as big a club as Manchester United? Is access the same at both, which is a friendly? I'd just like your observations on the two, because you know them both very well.
Yeah, very, very different clubs. There's some similarities, obviously, but yeah, I think it really strikes you. Obviously, Manchester United, I mean, it's fortunate to cover the club when you have big names there, you know, going to press conferences where Jose Mourinho is staring back at you, asking him questions, you know, speaking to people like Paul Pogba in the mix zone. And then when I came to Newcastle, it was obviously a difficult time for Newcastle at the time, obviously the final years of the Ashley era. And there's a different sort of feel around the club in terms of the ambition at that stage. But the one thing that really struck me years later was the cup final, when they played Manchester United. And I covered Manchester United in an FA Cup final before. Obviously, this was the Carabao Cup final, but in the FA Cup final. And that wasn't really an event, that game against Chelsea. You weren't having Manchester United fans necessarily, you know, having these big displays of emotion the night before the game, going down to the square, having a party or anything. And they weren't arriving in the stadium, you know, an hour and a half before the final either. And it brought home when they covered the Carabao Cup final against Manchester United and how Newcastle fans obviously had made a real weekend of it. It was their first final in so long, getting into the stadium earlier. And I never forget just how populated the Newcastle end was even 40 minutes before kickoff, and how sparse the Manchester United end was, that they hadn't yet gone to the stadium, hadn't been their first final for a while. This had been a fairly regular occurrence. And just that difference in what it would mean to win something, the difference in when you're regularly competing for trophies and when this is the first time in a while. And it gave you a flavour of, can you imagine if Newcastle one day win a trophy, just how different and transformative that would be.
Indeed. I mean, I'm fortunate, or perhaps because of my Wembley record, you might say unfortunate, to have covered Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, in cup finals and playoffs, etc., at Wembley many, many times. And each time has felt like an occasion, you know, from the Friday or Saturday night at Trafalgar Square to getting to the ground at an hour or so before the opposition fans. You know, quite rightly, you call it an occasion. But I look forward to the day when it's not an occasion for the region's teams, when it is a match. And I'm not saying, that's, you know, I'm not saying Manchester United or Liverpool or Chelsea fans or Man City fans, it's familiarity breeds contempt. But maybe we don't want it to be an occasion. We want it to be a regular occurrence for our teams, and because you know, and they win as many as they lose, or perhaps win more.
Yeah, I mean, you could even see in the build-up to that final last season how it was affecting the players. You know, the league form tailed off a little bit. It was such a big thing in the city. Remember the window displays and everything. And I think this will probably be the part Newcastle fans will probably savour. You know, one day the club hope to get to that point, like you say, where, you know, Manchester City are winning regular cups and having regular trips to Wembley. It doesn't seem a big deal to the fans. They're going down, they're coming back the same day, as it were. I think what I'd say is for Newcastle fans that this, when you get to that point, maybe it becomes more expected. Whereas now there's that, as we were saying, you know, if, you know, man hadn't even landed on the moon when they last won a trophy, when that record finally ends, whenever it may be, you just know it's going to be such a historic moment.
That's right. Now coming from the west coast of Ireland, I think there is one major difference between Newcastle and the so-called elite. But every other man in Ireland, north, south, east or west, are followers of Manchester United, Liverpool, Celtic, really, aren't they? And Newcastle,
yeah, a few Arsenal. In
particular, Arsenal as well. I can remember actually during the days of Roy Keane at Sunderland, Kieran, and Sunderland put charter flights on, and there was such interest, which were fully booked, you know, for a season or so. Yeah. And there was even talk, I remember, of having a Sunderland club shop in Cork because, of course, you had the Charlie Hurley factor and then Niall Quinn and the Drummerville consortium. And, of course, Keane was the biggest name in Ireland, the biggest sports star. And it's obviously that disappeared to some extent as Sunderland's fortunes slumped. But Ireland, it is very, very, as you say, Arsenal as well. Newcastle, do they have much of a presence in any of the four provinces, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's there. It's interesting in Ireland. It can be random how people follow the club. So like you say, if a group of Irish players are there, there's an affinity, because you have to remember it's quite a distance from, say, Sunderland to, I don't know, we'll pick Carlow or Mayo or wherever. And often when I'm in the airport coming back home or going on the way out and it's a match day, it never ceases to amaze me how you will see Irish Leeds fans about to go up to Yorkshire to fly out for a 3 p.m. kickoff.
That's right. I was going to mention Leeds. It's from Drogheda, because I know people in Drogheda. It's from the Gary Kelly, Ian Hart days.
Isn't yes.
It? And they've always had a strong presence.
Exactly. It's such a massive thing that, you know, if Irish people see Irish players there, you can't underestimate how an impact that can have. And what I would say is that's maybe come at a cost, of course, of the own Irish domestic league. And that's starting to respond now. You're starting to see that grow again, because I think a lot of people can't see the value of going along to their Irish team as well. And the significance of that and the impact that can make in supporting the Irish teams and helping that league grow, because you look at the national team, obviously it's been a very tough time. I think the relying on players coming through overseas in England and getting the game time and playing the Premier League, they can no longer really rely on that anymore. I think there are a few obviously Irish players playing in the Premier League and doing well, but they really need that grassroots and to thrive as well, because you look at some of the best Irish players of the past 10-15 years, they will have had a stint at some stage in the League of Ireland, and I think that's still really important back home. But the Premier League is massive. You go anywhere in the world, you mentioned the Premier League, it's probably, without exaggerating, saying Great Britain's best export, really, because everyone in the world knows about it, everyone follows it, and it's no different back home now.
Yes, you're probably a little bit too young for it, but 20 years ago, there was such a strong Irish presence in this region. You know, up Middlesbrough, there was Curtis Fleming, Newcastle, Shay Given, of course. Before him, there was the likes of Mick Martin, David Kelly played for Newcastle and Sunderland. And then, of course, Roy Keane, Niall Quinn, the Drummerville Consortium, the late Liam Miller, of course, Anthony Stokes had a spell at Sunderland, and the... A lot of our colleagues from across the Irish Sea were regular visitors to this region to do pieces. And I can remember at one time writing as much for the Irish editions as was for the British editions, because there was such interest over there in the Northeast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I look at when I was in Manchester, how when I arrived, it was just as Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho arrived, and you wouldn't believe how many Spanish-based journalists were coming over at that time to report, literally living in Manchester day to day, and there was such interest in Manchester, felt like the centre of football for a while, that's what happened there as well. And I think, as it goes in Ireland, I think there is a bit of a connection between the Northeast and you know, how the Northeast people are quite similar to Irish people, I found, you know, in their way of going about life, working hard, that old cliche. And we look at John Anderson, of course, still here all these years later. It's not a coincidence.
Yeah, and of course we all like the drop of the black stuff as well. That's yeah. let's turn to the matches this week. I mean, Newcastle have a lot to play for. Sunderland have, well, nothing to play for, really. They put in a very good performance, I thought, yeah. at Elland Road. Yes, they had to defend, but it wasn't desperate defending. It was organised defending. And while there was a stonewall penalty lead should have had when 09 handled, you know, Sunderland did deserve that point, and they looked much more like the team they were earlier this season. But tough trip to West Brom, who look a shoo-in for the top six.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I suppose you would have said that about the Leeds game, and I have to say I've been really impressed by their response since the Blackburn game. You know, they looked like a team that I suppose wanted the season done that day, and mm-hmm. how they've responded since then. Home draw against Bristol City, away draw against Leeds United. It shouldn't be anything to be celebrated. Obviously, Sunderland want to be going places where, you know, they're really competing in those games and potentially win those games one day. But I think the way they finish this season is really important. They don't want a hangover going into next season. They want to have that little bit of solidity and steel again, and I think that's a foundation you can then the new manager can take into the new season and build on. So yeah, it's a tough game against West Brom, but I think that they'll take so much confidence from the Leeds game and know that if they can just keep solid, who knows what could happen.
I think a successive nil-nil draw suggests there's no lack of commitment. There may be a lack of confidence after a very poor run. And looking myself, I don't think they'll play badly at the Hawthorns, but I can see the Baggies possibly nicking it 1-0. Don't know about you.
Yeah. I'd say I think it'll be tight. Maybe 2-1, something like that. I think Sunderland fans just want to see them score again, won't they?
I thought that'd be lovely, wouldn't it? And Middlesbrough and Hull, last night, it was a 2-2 draw. Middlesbrough went into an early lead. Latte Latte's in real form at the minute. He looks a good striker now that he's settled into English football. But it was probably a result neither side wanted. Middlesbrough unbeaten in 7. Go to Ipswich, who themselves had a disappointing result in midweek. Yeah. But I can see Middlesbrough drawing again at Portman Road, which on the surface would be an excellent result. But again, it would probably condemn them to a place outside the top six.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Ipswich. This is the crunch time, isn't it, where when you're in that position, you just have to find a way by hook or crook by winning games. And they did that against Southampton earlier the month, but then they had that Derby defeat, which knocked them. And then, as you say, that Watford game at home is a game you have to be winning. And I look at what Middlesbrough did. I think they went to Leicester early in the season and they caused a bit of a shock there and won there. I wouldn't be surprised if this was a draw as well, maybe a 2-2 or something, because I think Middlesbrough have that in them to definitely cause them problems. And Ipswich, you just wonder, is the pressure getting to them? It looked like they'd wobbled early in the season. They came back so well. And now this is, you know, the final four games where you have to find a way of getting over the line and getting in that automatic promotion.
That's right. And there's no Irishman making his mark more than Kieran McKenna right now, who, of course, Michael Carrick and him, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's two assistants at Old Trafford. Yeah. They're good friends. They keep in touch. They are both seen as rising stars in the managerial head coach role. But it is McKenna who is the leading light this season, isn't he?
Yeah, it's stunning, really, what Ipswich have done. I think, what they did last season and then to have kept this going for so long. I mean, even if they finish in the playoffs, it's been a superb season. I think it's interesting, both Carrick and McKenna were at Manchester United when I was there, and Mourinho was the one who kind of brought them into his inner circle. Not many people from the outside come in there, and really the feedback you got was that these guys were really bright coaches. And I think the way they've gone about it since going their own way, since leaving Manchester United, it's been very impressive. They're both very different characters in some ways, but there's that real similarity as well. They seem very progressive. modern managers, but they also seem to have that steeliness as well, and you need that. And I think that's been really encouraging to see. You know, for me, they both look like two future Premier League managers, whether it's with Ipswich and Middlesbrough or maybe one day with someone else.
Yes, time and time again, guests have come on the show, and I've said it myself, just how impressively Michael Carrick handles himself, because, you know, it hasn't been plain sailing this season. There've been bad spells, there've been disappointments, and there've been poor performances. And yet, you know, there is that bounce back ability factor which he can instill into the squad. And after a bad run, and you know, Wembley dreams being shattered, it shows good resolve that they've come back and put this run together so late in the season with a bad injury list as well.
And even if you look at how last season ended, maybe it was a disappointment as well. And they've had those tests along the way, but they've, as you say, they kept coming back, back in the picture again. Yeah, it's definitely impressive when you compare, you know, some of the other squads, some of the other budgets elsewhere, how they are performing, and it's been consistent under him. But I just think he's got that mentality going back to his playing days, where he never got too high or too low. He really knows what it's about and he's really proved that he can adapt that at this level. So yeah, he's been impressive.
Yes. Now let's finish where we started. Newcastle's game. Now I think all three results are quite possible tomorrow lunchtime. I've got a sneaky feeling that Tottenham might nick this one. I don't know why. I mean, people remember the big wins Newcastle have had against Tottenham. There was under Kevin Keegan, they won 7-1, of course, last season 6-1. But of course, Tottenham don't have a bad record. And I think I'm right in saying that before last season's demolition, Newcastle hadn't beaten Spurs at St. James's Park since 2017. So there certainly isn't a fear factor from the visitors. And I just think, you know, that they've got a full strength side out, more or less.
Okay, yeah.
Rick Carlson's out, but he might have been on the bench. Newcastle don't, and I think that could be the telling factor.
Yeah, I even look from afar the mentality of Spurs under Pascal Coglu. Like, he was asked before this game about how their next home game is against Arsenal and how Spurs can have a say in the title race with that huge derby. And he said, no, it's Newcastle, mate, first. You know, that focus is on this game, because I think they know it's going to be a tough game, and they know if they're not at their best, they don't get that 3 points they need in their Champions League push. But Newcastle have so much to play for as well. And I think the manner in which they finished that game against Fulham, where they were nowhere near their best, but they dug it out, they kept going, they got that late goal, you know, taking 7 points from 9, it ended up being a pretty productive week, even after that disappointment against Everton. And I suppose you have to remember, they haven't got many more home games left. They'll know this is a big game for them as well. So I think Newcastle can definitely produce something. I don't see them even with the injuries, I think they can definitely ask one or two questions of Spurs. I personally can see there being a lot of goals, unsurprisingly. There always is these days, and maybe a 2-2 even.
Wow. Well, Kieran, I've thoroughly enjoyed your first appearance on the show, and I can promise you it won't be your last. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you for the chance. Good to speak to you.
Take care. Well, I've heard a lot of people predicting home wins. I've heard a few predicting away wins and quite a few predicting draws. But the one common denominator, Dave, is that everyone thinks there'll be goals at St. James's Park tomorrow lunchtime.
They do.
And, you know, we were talking early in the programme. I was talking about famous games I can remember, you know, Middlesbrough 8, Manchester City 1. You wouldn't have that these days, would you?
That was
Sunderland beating Man City. 2008, was that?
Sunderland beating Man City, yeah. Not sure if it's 2000.
No, Middlesbrough.
Oh, Middlesbrough. 2008, I was there at the game, and wasn't it Alfonso Alves's hat-trick?
It was.
That £12 million signing from Holland.
It did boost his goal ratio somewhat, didn't it?
The one that, I tell you what, this is how old I am, the one that really sticks in my mind, because I was at the game, this is how old I'm going to be.
Can I guess?
Go on, then.
What you're going to talk about?
Yeah, go on.
I think you're going to be talking about a game when they won 7-2, Mickey Burns scoring 4.
Great shout, but not the one. Not the one. I can better that 7. It was Borough 8, Sheffield Wednesday 0. 1974, Souness got a hat-trick. And the thing that really sticks in my mind is Wednesday and United used to You remember the old half-time scoreline boards where there were actually numbers painted on a board, because it was before electronic scoreboards.
And but, you had to buy the match day programme to work out which game they were talking about.
Exactly, because it was A, B, C, D, E. Well, Sheffield United would always reflect how Wednesday were doing, and Sheffield United were at home that day. They didn't have a number 8 board, so they put 2 4s on top of each other to signify their bitter cross-town rivals were getting beat.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Isn't that amazing? What I mean, you know, we could take up a whole program talking about memorable games and high scoring games, and there have been so many. You know, we have been starved of honours in this region, but we haven't really been starved of goals. Too many to the opposition, of course, but you know, there's been a fair share of cracking games up here over the years, many years you and I watch football.
Talking hat-tricks, and obviously I'm a Borough fan, so I remember a lot to do surrounding the Borough, but talking hat-tricks, Fabrizio Ravanelli on his debut, 3-3 draw at home to Liverpool.
That's right, and I can remember a game years ago, I was a kid when Middlesbrough came to Newcastle, and I think they won 4-2, and Billy Ashcroft scored a header from about 30 yards. It was quite a that was probably a child's mind recalling it, but it was certainly from outside the box. It was quite sensational. Of course, he was a striker who eventually he started playing centre half at Borough, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Mm. He was a striker at Borough, and then, yeah, you're right, he moved back into a defensive position. He's actually a friend of the Reds, so he does follow the Red radio station, does Billy. So, hello, Billy, if you're listening.
Well, listen, I'll tell you, talking Borough nostalgia, I've got the perfect guest in the second half of the show, in Gordon Cox, who I know is a good friend of yours as well. We've had a lot of Newcastle and Sunderland guests on in recent weeks, so as ever, this is a show which stretches from North Northumberland to North Yorkshire, so it's about time we had someone to talk Borough. And Gordon, I couldn't think of someone better qualified.
And he's coming next.
Black and white and red all over. 3 decades of reporting North East football. Ian Murtagh. The Cat, the Tune
and the Red. Well, my next guest is, how should we describe it? A jack of all trades, but he's also a master of quite a few of them as well, particularly when it comes to Middlesbrough Football Club. He currently works for Middlesbrough Foundation. He started off as a turnstile operator at Ayresome Park. He's contributed to the matchday programme. He's worked for the press office. I think he's most fondly remembered for his close friendship and his professional relationship on radio with the sorely missed Ali Brownlee, who they were very, very close. Would that they be your happiest times, I guess, working for Middlesbrough or supporting Middlesbrough, Gordon Cox?
Good evening, Ian. I did wonder where you were going with that introduction.
It was all positive stuff. Don't you worry, Coxie. Don't you worry.
It was. I just think when people say, how should we describe him? There's usually some little twist somewhere. So, yeah, but all good fun, man. All good fun. Was that the happiest time? Difficult to say. It was a very happy time. It was a very, obviously, very sad loss for everybody. You're right, Ali was probably my best mate. I would slightly dispute the fact that you were saying that we were professional on the radio. I'm not sure we would ever come
across that. Actually, highly unprofessional, if I'm being totally honest, yeah.
That's better. I'm proud of it. We enjoyed what we did, and I think the key to that, to be honest, Ian, it was that we never really took ourselves seriously. We provided a service, and we thoroughly enjoyed most of it. Not all the time. When you're getting beaten 4-0 down at QPR and the rain's lashing and it's a bit cold and wet and stuff like that. But look, we've all been there and all done that. But. You know, all joking aside, it was a great time. We thoroughly enjoyed it, and people are kind enough to this day to still recognise the voice, if you like, you know, and come over and just say, right, I've put a face to the voice now. Kind of them, you know. I tend to apologise when they do that, but it's nice when people do that.
Coxie, you've got a perfect face for radio, though, haven't you?
Oh, you're not kidding, Matt. You are not kidding.
I've got a confession to make. Occasionally, I will go onto YouTube and I will listen to Ali's commentaries from the story Bucharest and the Basel games, and it will bring a tear to my eye. I remember the Basel one made the 1 o'clock news on the BBC, and you know that they're now there in on more bricks and mortar, aren't they? As you drive into Weather Riverside, which was a wonderful gesture by the club. Can I ask you this? I mean, they're obviously Ali's two best known commentaries. You know, back to mind for Palmo and Heidi this and Heidi that. Did he do any better than that? You're the only person who could probably answer that question.
The simple answer is no, I don't think he did. And just let me put this in perspective as well, is that Ali was up for an award and was up against Chris Moyles, who was with Radio 1 at the time. And mm-hmm. the judging panel went for Chris Moyles, not because he was with Radio 1, but simply because they thought Ali had scripted it. They thought that had been written down and he was there in front of him. It wasn't.
Right.
I could hand on heart categorically tell you now that was not scripted. And at the end of it, he sort of, when we weren't working together, like physically doing commentary together, we're always at the same, well, usually at the same game, and we would talk about it afterwards. And I knew he'd done something or he'd said something by his response of, well, what do you think of this? I went, right, what have you done now? And he told me what he'd done. And the only person I think who got a little bit of a fright was Ali's wife, Wendy, who didn't know whether anybody was actually going to go around their house genuinely to go and get a palm. But that's a genuine story. Still keep in touch with Wendy, still a close friend. You know, she's... you know, she's done really well to pull herself around as well as Wendy, and the family, Bally's family have been great as well. We're still close, which is a testament to the enduring friendship that we had.
I think the greatest tribute you can pay anyone is when you bring back memories, you've got a smile on your face, and every Borough fan when they think of Ali have a smile on their face. So, but anyway, before we get too emotional, where I brought you on to talk about yourself, and I've known I've known you many, many years, but it was only yesterday when we set up this interview that you told me that your first job was actually as a turnstile operator at Ayresford Park. Now, I found that hard to believe because it would have meant you would have missed watching Borough for a few precious minutes after kickoff.
Yeah, you got to read the game, if that makes sense. Ian, because you when you were working on the turnstiles, yes, you would close at 3. Horror upon horror, you occasionally got like a half-time gig, so you missed the entire first half. But you didn't get too many of those. They spread those out throughout the course of the season. But you learned to read the crowd. You learned to read. And before the Newcastle and some of the fans jump in, yes, we did have a crowd at Essen Park. And you used to read them, and you would learn what was going on with the game and what was happening, and it became almost second nature to do that. But yeah, that's where it started. It was way back in the days when you were a teenager and you needed to get a job to get some money, and it was fine. There's a friend of mine who got me involved in it, and we still keep in touch these days. All those years ago, but he's now living in Southampton. I think he's from Billingham, so I think he treats himself as a missionary. He's preaching the gospel of the northeast on the south coast. But we do keep in touch a lot. And
will he make the significantly shorter journey from the south coast to Ipswich? Because I know you're heading to Ipswich tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the plan. I don't think he is, no. He's not that well at the moment. He finds it a little bit difficult getting around. He's had, and you associate with this, he's had a leg operation. You had your issues with your hip, and I'm pleased to say that you prefer to be on the mend.
Yes, I'm bionic now.
Well, that's funny enough, that's what my friend, but yeah, I met him at the Southampton game when we played down there 2-3 weeks ago. And he's got. He describes it as a bionic knee, But I think he thinks his hip's next, and he's moving from one thing to another. So he'll be listening. But he no, I don't think he'll. I don't think he'll be there. But be a decent Borough following again.
It's right up there with Newcastle and Sunderland. So I think possibly fans in China weird just don't realise just how big and how fanatic the Borough away following is, and it's equally as good, equally as vocal, and equally as committed as their friends or their foes from Tyne and Wear.
Yeah, I mean, we all have our differences, of course we do. You know, but there are plenty of us who would far sooner see the top three in the Premier League being from the North East rather than being from either from Manchester or North London. So yeah, we do keep an eye, and of course we have a bit of banter and a bit of a laugh, and that's the way it should be. You know, you should be able to you know, stand and have a drink and have a chat with you know, the opposition supporters. Sadly, not always the case, but they'll be there. You know, we'll be there in numbers again tomorrow. Big game, but for both sides, this one, big game. Well, you know, you can look at it, and people will argue that Middlesbrough, they're not going to get on the shirt tails of the playoffs, but you've been in the game long enough, and you know you don't write teams off until it's mathematically possible. And Ipswich, obviously, you know, they're, you know, in that ridiculously tight squeeze, yes, at the top of the table. It could be a really good and open game tomorrow. At least I hope it is. It's a long way down there.
Before we talk about this weekend's fixtures, I think all three are fascinating. A little bit more about yourself, and you've touched on it, Gordon, but I'd like to ask you, do you consider yourself a Borough fanatic first or a football fanatic first? Because there is a difference, isn't there?
Good question. Let me sort of slightly turn the answer. Big Borough fan, yes, been a Borough fan for goodness me, how many years? Over 50 years, I dare say it would be. Let me say, I've been to every ground in the top four divisions, so the 92. I've been to all of the Scottish grounds in their four divisions, and I've been to all the grounds in the Northern League in Division 1, Division 2. So
I think you've answered my question perfectly there.
Yeah. So, yeah, you make your own mind up with that one. I've never really categorise myself. I don't particularly like talking about myself, to be honest with you. I don't find it particularly an endearing characteristic. But well, I'm quite happy to answer your questions, obviously, Matt. But football. Yeah, I'm not. I'll be perfectly honest. I'm not a massive fan of the Premier League. It's become for me a little bit of a circus. So, you know, away from the football. Some of the football is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But, you know, behind the scenes, and you see it more than I do these days, you know, it's a little bit more of a circus. But still, sorry, go on here.
I can empathise, because I hate VAR. I hate VAR with a passion. And because I cover Premier League games and Championship games, you can tell the difference in that instant when a goal is scored. Because a Sunderland fan, a Middlesbrough fan, a Hartlepool Darlington fan, they know that goal is going to count as long as the linesman's flag isn't raised or the referee doesn't blow his whistle. It's strange to describe, but you can feel that atmosphere of uncertainty in the Premier League when there's a goal. And I don't like it. I really, really don't like that. And I think if we held a poll among our listeners, I would imagine 60% would go back to the days when there wasn't VAR, because it is spoiling football. It really, really is.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I'm not really in a position of authority to comment on it, Ian, so I don't see too many Premier League games firsthand. Obviously, with Borough being in the Championship and you know, trying to get a ticket to watch the games at St James's is difficult enough. I mean, I do, you know, the Borough fans won't like me for saying so, but I do quite like watching football up at Newcastle when we're not playing there, you know, from time to time, because the football is usually passionate and committed. But I've seen enough, obviously, you know, TV coverage of it all, and that's part of the circus that I don't like. It spoils the game. It spoils the spontaneity for me, and you know, look, referees are human beings. Goalkeepers make mistakes. Defenders, midfielders, strikers, everybody will make a mistake. It's human nature. That's part of the game, isn't it? You know, and you watch it at every level. And I just wonder, you know, the games that I've been going to, the lower league levels, the attendances are getting bigger. If you talk to a guy who you'll know well, if you talk to Mike Amos, Mike will tell you that over the last
legend,
3-4 years or so, absolute, you know, legend of Northern League standing and beyond. I was talking to me 2-3 weeks ago, and he's saying that over the last 3 or 4 years, there's been a steady increase in attendances at Northern League games. I just wonder, it's not just Northern League, you know, you're talking with Spennymoor, you know, you mentioned Darlington before.
Well, South Shields had 3,500 for the South Shields Spennymoor game a few weeks ago, didn't they? You know,
didn't Shields score 7 in the game after that?
It's great, and you know, I think these promoted non-league days during international breaks are wonderful, and I would recommend anyone go to Darlington, Blyth Spartans, Spennymoor, South Shields, or Northern League game as well. But this show is focuses on the big three, for better or for worse, and I always ask my guests for predictions, even for the teams that they don't watch. So we'll start off talking about the Newcastle game against Spurs. Of course, earlier in the show we were talking about last season's remarkable game when Newcastle won 6-1 and were 5-0 up after 21 minutes. But how you know, Spurs are a much different side now, and how do you see that game going? It's a televised lunchtime game, so you may catch it.
It's not going to be goalless, is it? I mean, it's not going to be
It's certainly not.
That's the last result I'll probably put on. So go and get your money on 0-0 now. calling that one, I think, you know, Newcastle are a good, honest, open side. They've struggled like many sides, obviously with the injuries, and that's blighted a lot of their sort of second part of the campaign. Tottenham, you just don't know which Tottenham are going to turn up. That to me makes a really enticing game of football. I think tomorrow could be a really open, really exciting game of football. I think it's set to be full of goals. Whether Newcastle will be 5 up in 21 minutes again, I think, is probably debatable, but then again, you didn't see it last time.
I would slightly disagree with you about which Tottenham will turn up, because I think under Ange Postecoglou, then they might lose games, but I think it is the same attack-minded, focused and hard-working Tottenham that do turn up this season.
No, I'd agree with that. I think, sorry, I maybe didn't make it quite clear that in terms of the Tottenham, you've got a Tottenham side who are run remarkably close by Luton recently, who are obviously, yes, you know, fighting against relegation. I would know that Tottenham will go for it, and Postecoglou did that, as you know, up at Celtic.
I think we've lost Gordon.
Yes, I
think just when he was in full flow.
He was. We'll try and get him back, because we still want to get all these predictions out. By the way, we've just had a WhatsApp from Alan, who says the game you mentioned about the Borough Chef Wed, is actually, its anniversary is tomorrow, 13th of April, 1974. How spooky is that?
And I think Borough, by that stage, were already promoted, weren't they, under Jack Charlton?
They were. Yeah, they were. It
was quite remarkable back then, because it was the easiest promotion was it in history at the time? I think there'd been more emphatic promotions since, but it was, yeah, absolutely.
Gordon's back on the line.
Excellent. Gordon, you were in full flow, and you can, I'm handing you the baton, and you can carry on sprinting around the track.
Thank you, Gianni. I'm not sure I've sprinted for quite some number of years, but still, apologies, I don't know what happened.
But yes, we were talking Newcastle. I do as well. Now, let's move on to Sunderland. Sunderland are at West Brom, and for most of the season, or should I say until Tony Mowbray was harshly sacked, I would have expected Sunderland to finish above Borough. Now, that's not going to happen now, much to your joy. But they put in a very competent performance, I thought, against Leeds in midweek. It was not a fortuitous 0-0 draw. They fully deserved it. Now, two successive 0-0 draws hardly points to a side full of confidence, but I think they'll go there in relatively good spirits. And while I would expect West Brom to pip them, I think it could be a very, very close game at the Hawthorns. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been inclined to agree with your assessment there, Ian, to be honest. And I know we don't always agree on a lot of things, but I would agree on that, because what it may not be a sign of a side with much confidence, but it's a sign of a side who have got it together defensively after what happened against Blackburn. Just an astonishing scoreline. And then Blackburn go and get beaten 5-0 at Bristol City. So, I mean, you try working up football. I can see Sunderland. Well, you can't. You're right. I can see Sunderland getting the point there, because I don't think West Brom are in the richest vein of form themselves. They're in that area where they know they're pretty much guaranteed in the playoffs, but they're not going to get automatic promotion, and that affects sides in strange ways. We've seen that before. Saw it with Middlesbrough last season, and we've seen it with other teams as well. When you get into that area where you think, right, okay, we're going to preserve our energy, if you like, or maybe not, you don't switch off, but you try to make changes, you try to rest some players, and you disturb the rhythm a little bit. I think West Brom might be in that at the moment. They're drawing a lot of games right now. They're scoring goals. So again, I don't see there's going to be much more than a goal between them. If you had to put money on it, maybe 2-1 West Brom. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if Sunderland did manage to pull a point off there as well. But it's another tight one. Well, I think we're talking goals right across the big three, as you call them. I think we're talking goals across all three for those games, to be honest.
Now, let's move on to the game that you'll be at down at Portman Road. And, Ipswich and the other sides pushing for automatic promotion, they've shown a few signs of nerves recently. Middlesbrough will be going there in good spirits, looking for, is it a ninth unbeaten game?
And it is, yeah, eighth unbeaten at the moment.
It's a wonderful testament to the mentality of the side, because they were going nowhere a few weeks ago. They might still be going nowhere, but it's important to finish the season with a flourish. And for what it's worth, I think they'll probably finish 7th or 8th this season, miss out the playoffs, but that will put them in as one of the promotion frontrunners for next season. So it is important to have a little bit of momentum at the end of May.
It is, and I think if you do, if you end up, as you say, 7th or 8th, if that's where they are to finish up, it's a more attractive proposition when you're going into the transfer market in the summer. Where, geographically, Middlesbrough and Sunderland, not so much Newcastle, that's different. They're a big city, and it's different. Attracting players for Middlesbrough and Sunderland isn't the easiest thing in the world. People don't want to come to the northeast historically. I mean, I'm not talking just recently, but we go back years and you go back decades. And it's not been that easy. You have to pay an extra percentage, don't you, a lot of the time, to get some players to come and play for you. You question then, are they the right type of player for the club? Look, if they're scoring goals, you accept everything and just get on with it. The bottom line for me, you've got to finish the season on a high, really, I think. And that will carry through the summer, despite what people think. There's a big break there, yes, of course. But, people and fans will... we'll take that into the summer and build on that. It's a difficult game tomorrow. Of course, it is. The run in for Middlesbrough is the next two games will tell everything you need to know where they're going to finish. They've got Ipswich tomorrow. The next game is a week on Monday against Leeds. So yes. Look, as any Borough fan that may be listening, they'll be familiar with the phrase "typical Borough." It wouldn't surprise them if we go and win at Ipswich, beat Leeds, and then lose against Watford and Cardiff in the last two matches.
I don't worry. Personally, I think out of our three teams, Borough will be the only ones who will pick up points this weekend. I would suspect it will be a draw, but I think it's important. I think 80 to 90% of Borough fans accept they're not going to make the playoffs. I don't know whether you're in the 10% or the 90%, but, you know, the mood among Borough fans, it's pretty positive, isn't it?
I think you had to, if you were at Hull on Wednesday, you would have seen the response from the Borough fans. The 2-2 draw against Hull, going into the game, level on points, level on goal difference, I think. Obviously, nothing between. Hull do have a game in hand. But the Hull fans were fairly despondent. They saw that as like a missed chance. Borough fans were I thought, I wouldn't say surprisingly, they've always been good, as we discussed, away from home. But their reaction was completely different to that at Hull. And they, you know, they still say, a lot of them still say that, you know, there's a chance there. You know, there is still the shirt tails to go for. A lot of it depends on what Norwich do, of course, what Coventry do as well. You can only win your own games, eh?
Absolutely. Gordon, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. You've been a wonderful asset to the show. And I think I'll close by saying that if Alistair Brownie was known as the voice of Bowie, you are very much the heart and soul of that football club. So thank you very much for coming on.
I'd take that as a heartfelt and well-accepted compliment, and I do appreciate you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to have a chat with you on here. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Have a safe trip and come back with 3 points.